52 of Tech AU. My name is Jason Cartwright. I'm coming to you from Wodonga, Australia. For those of you who've never joined the show before, never seen it before, or listened, thanks very much for tuning in. And make sure you tell all your friends if you enjoy it. I'm sure you will. So this is a show we talk about technology news, the latest events and happenings in the industry, and with a specific focus on Australia and what's happening in the local market. So to start off this week, it is the end of 2010. It's the last episode for the year. It's currently the 23rd, so a couple of days before Christmas. And at this time of the year, we all start to look back over the year and see, you know, the events that have transpired and what we've done and what we've achieved. And that's great. So we're going to take a look at the year in review at the end of the episode. So stay tuned for that. But for right now, let's cover off the big, probably the biggest story of the week was the release of the document, the NBN business plan from the government. So it's obviously under a lot of scrutiny, a lot of dollars, the biggest infrastructure project in Australia, in Australia's history. So obviously it needs to be scrutinised fairly heavily. And the government's been pretty tight-lipped about what's actually, you know, the finer details of the plan. So what's actually involved. And this week we basically seen some of the unveiling of that detail. So to start off, we're basically looking at the NBN Co. is a company that's going to own the infrastructure and then going to wholesale it to your ISPs. So your internodes, Telstra, Optus, iiNet, all of those ISPs that you traditionally buy internet from. The wholesale price that they'll start plans at is going to be $24. So that's what the NBN Co. sells basic internet plan to the retailers. So we would expect the retailers are going to have a certain markup on that. They've got expenses and it costs them. They run other services. Take Internode, for example. They run a bunch of gaming servers. So there's still costs associated, obviously staffing and all that sort of jazz as well, and administration. So we're not going to get plans for $24. I understand that. But you know, the government was really pressed by journalists there as to what the actual price consumers will pay for that entry-level plan. And of course, the government stepped back and they said, well, look, we don't dictate, you know, retail. That's the idea. We wholesale it and then the retailers compete. Fantastic. That's a good idea. But then, you know, when pressed about it, they basically responded and said, you know, our expectation is that the plan would land somewhere around $52 to the customer. So that's a markup from $24 wholesale to $52 to the consumer. So I ask you, is that a reasonable markup? I mean, think of your retail items, the standard things you buy from stores. We might see 10, maybe 20% markup on certain things, maybe even 30%, but not from 24 to 52. That's quite a reasonable markup. And we're talking about internet. You know, it's not like they have manufacturing costs that need to go into it. They have, as I said, server costs and that sort of stuff and administration and all that sort of jazz. But yeah, I just think it's exorbitant. And basically what we should get to with the NBN is not only the extra speed. So that might land around similar prices. For low entry plans right now, people are probably paying $40, $50 for entry level ADSL2 plans. So we will be moving up in speed. That's great. But we should also, the NBN should achieve lower prices. So take my parents, for example. They love the internet, but they don't want to be paying $50 a month. They want to be able to do the occasional web chat to their grandkids and that sort of stuff, chat online and do the occasional Facebook. And that's pretty much it. That's their needs right now. So if they could get away with having the internet access for $20 a month, I mean that, or even 30, but it shouldn't cost them $50 a month just to have internet for those sort of few things that they do. So anyway, it looks like we're not getting two benefits in terms of faster speed and lower costs. It looks like we're basically getting faster speeds. That's a bit of a downside, but hopefully over time, as you know, as the NBN build out goes on, that competition really does start to fire, and that we do see a downward pressure on prices. So you know, maybe in 5 years that price does come down. Talking about the length of time it's going to take, it has been extended from the original 8 years to 9.5 years. And there was really no explanation as to why the extra time, that extra year and a half. So that sort of concerns me. But more than that is that the opposition still opposes the entire idea. They think that we can get away with satellite and mobile technologies, LTE or 4G, which is just ludicrous. I mean, anybody who understands fixed line and the speeds and services you can deliver over that versus mobile technology, which degrades when more and more people get on it, you get decreased speeds. It's just not practical to invest in that technology as a future mechanism to deliver our internet. So new and unique opportunities arise as a result of having that instant, immediate, fast speed. Now, you'll never get around the fact that a wireless signal has to go up to a satellite and back down, or to a cell tower and then be routed around and then back to you. So I just think that fiber is the way, and we should be far beyond this point of arguing which technology. The government took this plan to the last election. They got in. We should get the NBN, how Labor proposed it. So if their main point of disagreement, if the coalition disagrees with how much it's costing, I'd really like to see them invest their time in investigating ways to save money, not to use cheaper technology, use the best technology, but do it in a cheaper way. And if they can do that, then we all benefit. So with the opposition still opposing it, it concerns me that the plan's going to take 9.5 years to implement. It's obviously a huge infrastructure project. So I understand it's complicated. And even if you throw all the electricians in the world, you know, or in Australia, at putting fiber everywhere, it's still a massive task. So the issue with it running so long is that we're going to go through three elections during that time. So what happens if the next election that Labor goes out, the coalition get in? At what stage is the fiber going to be built? You know, they're talking up to 1.3 million Australians connected by then. So is that it? Do they just stay on it, or does it get switched off and they transition back? I mean, these are questions that'll come out or be sorted out over time, but certainly concerning things that I would have liked to seen bilateral support, you know. So that's my NBN rant, and it's a crazy way to start the episode. I didn't really want to get that involved, but yeah, certainly for the stuff that I do, NBN is going to be very, very important in the future. This morning, Skype went down and the internet fell apart. Well, not exactly, but obviously, anytime any major service is out, everybody jumps on Twitter, and then we start to see overcapacity messages on Twitter. So Twitter's going down as well. Skype have basically identified the issue and been really good about explaining that via their blog. They say that in a recent update to the Skype client, some of them went out without the ability to be super nodes. So if you don't know the way Skype works, rather than it be everybody connecting to Skype servers and they have to build a massive server farm, the way it works is more like a peer-to-peer sort of model. So if I'm connecting a Skype call from Australia to America, there may be somebody in between that is the intermediary or the super node that actually hosts that call. So without as many super nodes out there, obviously that puts demands on the ones that are, and then the whole system breaks down. So they've identified the issue and they said that the service is slowly returning over the next few hours to people. So it was a big outage. I was watching twit.tv, if you don't know it, and they were, you know, having real issues because you know, their whole podcasting network basically relies on the fact that they can Skype in people from all around the world. So without Skype, what do they turn to? They actually use GChat, which is fine if all your contacts are on Google, but mine aren't, and I doubt all your contacts are on Google either. So it was a nice workaround, and it worked for them. Won't work for everybody, but yeah. Oh, on a side note, Uvu, if you've heard of that before, I've used it. You can actually do up to six-way chats with people, so six video calls at the same time, which is really nice. And the issue is that it's not free like Skype. It's you pay for that, but they're having a special till the 2nd of January, and they're going to make those six-way calls free. So it's a good opportunity to try it out now, and if you like it, maybe you'll pay in the future. Just sort of throw that in there and let you know. Next story is CES 2011 is coming up very quickly on us. So 6th to the 9th of January is CES. And obviously this year, CES was heavily focused on 3D TVs. And we've really seen that. Like if you go into your electronics retailer at the moment, you'll see, you know, in every store, there's 3D represented. It's not across every TV set at the moment, but it's certainly getting that way, that it's sort of just another checkbox feature for a TV. So CES is the biggest consumer electronics show, and it really previews technology that we'll see mid to late 2011. So it's well worth paying attention to sort of get a view into the future, see what manufacturers have come up with, what new technology. I would love to go. I won't make it there this year, but maybe 2012 could be the year where I make it to CES. So I think tablets, like in terms of themes for 2011, I think tablets are going to be huge. Microsoft have, or there's at least been rumors that Microsoft will be re-releasing their tablet strategy. Obviously, we've seen this year's CES, Steve Ballmer, the CEO, stand up and demonstrate showcase the HP tablet that was going to be running Windows 7. Well, their plans didn't really work out that way, and HP pulled the tablet. And we haven't really seen any Windows 7 tablets, any viable ones anyway, into the market. So iPad's been extremely successful. Samsung's Galaxy Tab has done well. And Microsoft's big play in the tablet space could be this year's CES. So I would imagine that they'll play to their strengths of the Xbox and Office and, even Live Essentials, if there's a tablet version of those. I would really love to see and use Windows Live Writer on a tablet. It's my application of choice for blogging, and I use it wherever I am, and it's something I really miss from the iPad. Of course, there is like WordPress and BlogPress and all those sorts of apps on the iPad, but they're just not the same. They're just not as easy to use and good as Windows Live Writer. So Microsoft certainly have some strengths there, and depends how they roll it out. If they do hear feedback from consumers and say, look, just throwing Windows 7 on there isn't a fantastic idea. It's not a great experience. It's better than having XP on there, but it's not, you know, the entire UI isn't designed for touch. So we'll wait and see on that, but exciting times. The next story I want to talk to is incredibly exciting. It's an awesome opportunity. I've been invited to go to the North American International Auto Show by Ford, as a guest of Ford. And basically they're having a, you know, they've got their great Ford Sync technology, so built on Windows Automotive. They offer the push button on the steering wheel, and you can give it voice commands to play your favorite song or read your text messages, all that sort of jazz. So they're really sort of leading the way in car technology. And I suspect the reason they're inviting not only me, but 100 bloggers and media journalists from around the world is that they've got a big announcement coming at that auto show relating to green technology, which for me says electric cars. So we've seen Mitsubishi have their iMiEV, Nissan have their Leaf, Chevy have their Volt, and obviously Tesla have their Roadster. So everybody's getting in this game, and electric cars, I think, are the way of the future. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if this event is the announcement of Ford's electric vehicle. So very enthusiastic to go there. It's a fantastic opportunity, as I said. Very, very excited. And that's going to be on the 9th to the 12th of January. So it's butting up right against CES. So there's going to be some journalists that are having to rush from CES over to the auto show, which is in Detroit, Michigan. So exciting times. So you can watch the hashtag NA, North America, International Auto Show. So NAIAS. Watch that on Twitter and you'll see all the news, as well as check out techau.tv during that time. I'm going to have heaps of coverage on it. Now, getting towards the end of the episode, as I mentioned at the top, let's have a look at the year in review and what, you know, my experience has been. And, you know, if you guys want to share your experiences, leave a comment on the post associated with this episode of the podcast, or send me an email or post a tweet, and it'll be good to hear what you thought, you know, 2010 or the best parts were. So definitely a highlight for me was my trip to North America earlier this year, so in March, April. So I went and visited Twit. I mean, this is a show that I'd been watching for years, and to finally get to meet Leo, Tom Merritt, and John C. Dvorak, I mean, that was just fantastic. Can't speak highly enough of those guys. They are as nice as they seem on the podcast and on Twit Live and stuff. Great bunch of guys, and yeah, just fantastic to see the Twit studio in person. And I'm actually really glad I got to go this year, because Leo's, if you're paying the attention to Twit, Leo's upgrading and moving studios, so they'll be leaving the cottage. So I was glad to see it now before they move. It was my first time out of Australia, so that entailed, you know, passport and visas and everything else and that goes along with that. So international travel, you know, so the international flights, and we actually got redirected through Hong Kong. So a lot of hours spent on airplanes, which is crazy. One of the, you know, the good things on the way home is that I had the iPad, so I picked that up in America. So that that allowed me to kill some time in the plane, which is great. Also, went to the San Diego Zoo while I was over there, and seen polar bears, and yeah, just things you don't normally get to see in Australia, which is great. Hot air balloon, never been in one, but I went on a hot air balloon ride in Phoenix. Helicopter ride over the Grand Canyon. I mean, this is just, it was, when I look back, it was just an amazing time. Like, 3 weeks went so fast because we were so busy and did so many things. Like, for 10 days of it, I was on a Kentucky tour with my cousin Matt. So he was a great travel partner too. It was fantastic. Spent a week in San Francisco. I love that city. I could absolutely live there. No worries at all. And probably another highlight was Tech Ed on the Gold Coast in September. I mean, it was just flat out for a week. Bunch of interviews, which you guys seen on Tech AU. And, you know, I bought the mixer for it, and got another mic and a mic stand and all that sort of jazz. So we can do that again, hopefully in the future. And as much as that was a really hard week of work, you know, we partied pretty hard too, and it was good. So I want to have a look at the technology we've sort of got this year as well, or that I've got. The new technology, obviously Kinect, is fresh, and seeing more and more Kinect games come out, which is fantastic. The developers are really getting on board with the platform. Kinect hacks are doing, you know, fantastic. If you haven't seen, just search Kinect hacks. There's a bunch that are coming out. If you're like me and you watch your feeds, you know, RSS, use Google Reader, pretty much most days there's a new Kinect hack out, which is great. And that sort of technology, the motion sensing, could very well be embedded in Windows 8 in the future. So that natural user interface of using gestures and stuff, rather than, and your voice, rather than just, you know, the traditional keyboard and mouse. Interesting concept. BoxyBox, a little bit of a disappointment, but we have seen at least one update so far. Hopefully we see more soon to fix more of the issues and just to improve it. And the key thing in 2011 for Boxy will be content deals. We really need to see TV shows and movies, even the ability to rent them or buy them through Boxy, is going to make a big, big difference in 2011. Got the iPad, as I mentioned, iPhone 4, the audio mixer, which I'm still using now. It's great. And so me and my girlfriend are going to have to spend Christmas apart. We're spending it with our own families. So we actually did Christmas last night. She got me a Logitech Purify Express Plus. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with that product, it's basically like an iPod dock, speaker dock, compatible with the iPhone, and it's also like an alarm clock. So I was just really chuffed that she knew I'd love that, and I absolutely do. So unwrapping it last night, it was fantastic. I was blown away. So, and it really pumps. Like, I was surprised the amount of volume you get out of it. That thing is, I'm really stoked. It was an awesome Christmas present. So the other thing is, I'm, you know, you see photos on the site that of different review products, or, you know, different things I'm writing about. And those photos, more often than not, are going to come from the new digital SLR I got at the start of the year before America. It was the Canon 500D. And if you're looking for an entry-level DSLR, the 500D is fantastic. If you can stretch your budget, get the 550. It's actually an improvement on mine. As always, it came out just after I got mine. This is the, you know, the world we live in technology. There's always updates. So you got to pull the trigger at some point. But I'm at the stage now where I'm looking at, you know, it came with the twin lens kit. I'm looking at, you know, what lenses I should buy next to continue that hobby of digital photography. But that's something I really enjoy. Also, in terms of gaming, we got Angry Birds, which is just huge. I mean, it is massive. It's a phenomenon. And they're talking movies and books, and there's already plush toys, and it's just nuts. My wallpaper is the Angry Birds, you know, Christmas wallpaper at the moment. So, no, it's good. Words with Friends as well. It's interesting to see just how many of my non-tech friends have iPhones or iOS devices in general. And to be able to play, you know, Words with Friends with them is fantastic. Probably, you know, running up to 8 to 10 games at the moment. And it really sort of makes you think, you know, words you don't typically use on an everyday basis. It sort of works the mind a bit, which I really enjoy. So, you know, making use of those tiles that you've got and having to formulate words based on that, it's interesting. If you don't have it, get it if you've got iOS. You can add me on there on TechAU. So pretty much got TechAU on all the services, I think. YouTube, if somebody at YouTube can help me out and get youtube.com/TechAU, I'd really appreciate it. I'm having to do TechAU.tv as the username, which really, it works and I can link to, you know, I can link people to it, but it's just nicer if it was all sort of, that's really the only one, I think. Flickr, Twitter, Facebook, Xbox, PlayStation. I mean, it's all TechAU. So anyway, actually, when you search on Google, this is a funny point. When you search on Google for TechAU, TechAU is actually, when you say TechAU, is somebody's surname. Or, you know, obviously a fair few people's surname. So I'm sure that they're pretty annoyed that I've got TechAU. And, you know, paying attention to these services and being up to date with the new ones that come out gives you the opportunity to take these usernames first. And it really is sort of a game that you've got to be up to date and you've got to be on the ball or you'll miss out. So the last thing is I want to just mention, pretty sure my parents aren't going to watch this show, so I can let you know that I got them a TV. So this is the first and probably the biggest item I've bought online is a TV from Kogan. So I've never bought Kogan before and the TV at their place is sitting there right now. So I'm going to open it, you know, obviously they'll open it on Christmas Day and I'm going to review it. You know, I'm spending a few days with the parents and I'll review it and let you guys know because I think quite a few of you are in the same boat as me. Sort of, you like the concept of Kogan in that it cuts out the retailers, goes straight from manufacturing, avoids wholesale, avoids retail, straight to the customer. So there's some cost savings involved there. So wait and see and I'll give you my review of this Kogan TV. And we can go from there. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting. It's starting to, you know, you can buy anything online these days. I don't know that I'd buy a car. I'd want to see a car and drive it first. But I'll buy an electric car anyway. Okay, so that's it. That's going to wrap up for 2010 people. You can contact me always at the site, techau.tv. Go and check that out. Tell your friends. And twitter.com/techau, facebook.com/techau. I always post new content there all the time and if you want to get to me, I'm watching TweetDeck pretty much most of the day, if not on my phone. So that is a fantastic way. Also on email, jason@techau.tv. And that's going to wrap it up. Have yourself a very happy and safe Christmas and make sure you drink plenty for New Year's. Bye.